Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Welcome to the CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce you today to Mara Seiler, who's the Deputy Director of Admissions, Access, and Inclusion at Rice University in beautiful Houston, Texas. Tamara, so glad to have you here today. How are you?
I am doing great. It's a warm day here, but it's a beautiful day, and really excited that in a month or so, we'll be starting our school year, get to meet some of those kids that I admitted, get to see some of them again. So this is an exciting time. It always is an exciting time to hopefully be near when you're going to get to see the results of all your hard work.
Well, it sure is. And we are absolutely excited to have you here, Tamara. So let me ask you, what is it about Rice University that makes it so appealing for so many students to want to apply and ultimately attend?
Well, I'll start, of course. I think it always starts with the academic experience. I think Rice doesn't offer everything, but what we choose to do, we do well. Students have the option of 50 different majors between 7 academic schools of study. They range from business to humanities to social sciences, engineering, music, architecture. And I think one of the things that really makes the student experience robust is the idea of not only having mastery in a particular area, subject area, but that experiential learning emphasis that we have here at Rice. So it's very easy to get access to things such as research and internships and practical experiences. And it all takes place in the dynamic city of Houston, which is the most diverse city in the U.S. It is also a city where the space industry got started, and all sorts of different options for students. So medicine, we're adjacent to the world's largest comprehensive medical center. So there's lots of innovation. It's a young city. It's an exciting city. It's a foodie city. I think, you know, our students find that the professors that teach them are very invested in their learning, 6-to-1 student to faculty ratio. Community is huge here at Rice, and first of all, diversity. Over 60% of our students identify as a student of color, and over 30% identify as what we would call a historically excluded student of color. We have students that get a chance to participate in our residential college system, 280 clubs and organizations, very student-empowered place. And Rice believes in doing everything at the highest level possible. So here you are, research level one research university, but we also practice sports at the Division I level. So students have a very exciting campus that they can be part of, and we make it extremely accessible through things such as our Rice investment, where pretty much students up to $200,000 incomes can expect to have some level of their education covered. And we just recently became a no loan institution. So wow. There's just so many different opportunities. But I think if students had to point to the number one thing, it is the community and the fact that there is this community of care. People come to Rice because they want to be engaged with the undergraduates and with graduate students, but they really believe in the Rice mission and the fact that we are really giving our students the chance to become scholars, but also great citizens. And I think that really appeals to a variety of students.
Well, it certainly does appeal to a variety of students, and it truly sounds like you have something for everyone. Tamara, I also have to share that I read that 97% of your freshman class actually returns, which is an amazing piece of data. And that is, of course, a testament to the great work that you do in admissions, but equally as important, the great work that the university does in terms of fostering an environment of inclusivity and family. So congratulations on that. That's just an astonishing statistic. I also wanted to ask, of course, students usually spend at least 4 years in college. So visiting campus before committing to a school is so important for the student to really get a feeling of whether or not the campus and surrounding area are for them. So Tamara, when a student comes to campus, what are the areas that they should visit, and what are the types of questions they should be asking in order to determine if the school is in fact the right fit for them?
Well, first, I think I would tell students, go ahead and you're in a time where so much information is available to you virtually and online. You know, go ahead and do that basic research before you get here, because I think when you get to campus, you want to be outside of a room with people talking to you as much as possible. So while it's nice to be able to ask an officer some questions while you're here on campus, sitting down for a full information session, we have those virtually. So if you're going to pay the money to come and actually see the campus, see the campus. Obviously, you want to try and take the formal tour, but then you want to carve out some time. The tour is only going to cover part of the campus. So if there are special things that you're interested in that are not on the regular tour route, you'll want to find out, you know, what is on the tour route. And then there might be some other things that you want to see on campus. For example, you may want to go out to a little bit further on campus to our arts center, and they have a nice coffee house there. Some of the best interactions you can have on a campus will be just walking around and observing how people interact with each other, observing their faces. I mean, is everybody smiling, or at least are there partly some people smiling? We will definitely, in our materials, always try to, you know, I used to call it the United Faces of Benetton, because, you know, obviously, we're always going to want to portray ourselves as diverse, open places. But I think when you can see that actually on campus, and I think we've had multiple people who remark that that's one of the things that they are struck by when they get to the Rice campus, is the ability to see not only the diversity we talk about, but to see it in action, to see students actually, you know, talking to each other in real time. So I think being able to make those type of observations. Obviously, coming to a college is going to, you're going to be on campus. We do have areas where you can kind of see what the rooms are like, ask what the living spaces are like, see where the food is being served, see what other food options there are on campus in case you just want to be around. But then you're going to be going to school in a city, and in this case it would be Houston, Texas, and you're in the middle of the city. I think you're about 2.5 miles from downtown Houston. You're adjacent to the Rice Village, which is about 400 shops and restaurants, and that's going to play a big part in life at Rice. So I would say, if you have time, build that time in to be able to go and see something in the community that is meaningful to you. So if you're a foodie, go and make sure you have time to go eat something. If you love the arts, we're within walking distance of most of the city's major museums. Go and see one of the museums. The zoo is across the street. We have Houston is an arts-rich city, so you may want, and if you're interested in the arts, you know, maybe go and see one of those performances that, as a student, you would be able to access very often, either for a reduced rate or for free. And so you want to know what your life is going to be like outside of just taking classes. And also, you know, talk to students about their internships, and maybe walk or drive around the city if you have an opportunity to do so. If you don't have a car, you can actually jump on the light rail and go downtown and kind of see what that experience is like, because a lot of our students utilize the light rail. So I believe that a lot of that, make it experiential, not sitting and asking students a lot of questions. Now, if you're a big scholar, it's okay to reach out to a department and see if there is a professor or a freshman advisor in that particular area of study who wants to talk to you. In some of our arts areas, like the Shepherd School of Music or the Architecture School, they would love to have you kind of stop by, even if it's possibly a drop-in appointment. So definitely, we want you to have a rich experience and keep yourself active while you're on campus, and not just look and see what you can do virtually and get that out of the way.
Well, thank you so much for that overview and tremendous pieces of advice. Obviously, speaking to random students on campus, visiting a local coffee shop, and of course, the amazing city of Houston, where you can indulge in the arts, restaurants, internships, and so much more. So again, Tamara, we really appreciate that overview. How many applications do you review a year, and do you represent a specific region? And any insight, Tamara, that you would be able to give us into your overall process would be greatly appreciated.
Last year, we received over 30,000 applications for what I would say was about 1,100 freshmen or first-year student spots. For me, because when I first started, I would easily say that I was reviewing 1,500 applications a year because of my territory. Because of my sort of senior placement in the office and the fact that I am actually a chair of committee, my area has to be a little bit smaller because of the review process and the amount of time it takes once the applications are read to actually make those thoughtful decisions on who actually gets invited to be part of the class. So for me, usually in a season, I'm not reading anymore. I'm reading about half the load of what would be we would consider to be a junior officer. So I'd probably be reading about 700 or so applications. Now, that's assuming that my territory behaves the same way from year to year. And sometimes I've done a really good job and I might get a few more applications. And I'm still going to read all the applications from my territory. So for me, my territory at present is four of the five boroughs of New York. So I do Staten Island, Manhattan, Brooklyn, and the Bronx. Not that I don't love Queens, but Queens is married more to Long Island. And then I also read Westchester County. And so I will read all the applications that come from there, whether or not, you know, at whatever time we receive them. And so that allows me to utilize my relationships that I've developed with the counselors, with the school communities, with the community-based organizations that with whom I interact, and hopefully bring the wealth of my knowledge to the table. I mean, I've had the privilege of reading the areas that I read since about 2000, and so I still look at school profiles and one of the great things about some of the virtual experiences is that it's allowed us to have greater reach, and so I get to read schools that I've never seen before with students applying to Rice as more and more students find out about the opportunities here, and that's exciting every year to get to read even more applicants from my areas. I think one of the things that's pretty distinctive about the way we review applications is that the applications are never reviewed by one person, and that's part of our committee-based evaluation. So every time an applicant is read, there are two people in the room, typically, and there's going to be the territory manager and another staff member. And then the other layer that gets laid on that, so if the territory manager is someone who's been reading applications for a long period of time, typically the second person in the room is going to be someone who would be more of a junior officer, hasn't read as long, and so that we're bringing the, you know, those, it also becomes a place of learning and sharing. That doesn't mean that the senior officer is dominating the conversation, and so it just means that they get a chance to see what we're seeing or hear us talk about what we're seeing in the application, and they get a chance to sort of tell us what they're seeing in the application, and we have a real-time conversation about what's happening. And so what that does is that it actually allows us often to move more quickly through a slate of applications. So in a given day, we may be reading anywhere from 70 to 80 applications together in that setting. Right. And so I know sometimes that can be very scary to families and students. They said, I put all of this effort into this application and you're only reading it for this short period of time. But what you're getting is you're getting two professionals to look at that application at the same time. And so, and a real-time conversation. So while it may not be necessarily a long conversation, it is a rich and robust one. And I think we get that's how we get through so many applications. But I think reading is only part of this. The decision-making process is another part. And I think, we may be reading applications in that shorter period of time, often I feel like I get to know kids really well because I'll see them at different phases in the selection process. I'll see them in sort of what we would call pre-committee as we're looking at students just to see the students that have gotten to this level. And then we'll start looking at the students we do look at students in the context of what they want to study by division of study. So I actually will, be the person who looks at almost everybody who's made it there from the natural sciences. And so I'm looking at all of those students in context. So I feel like even though, we didn't spend a lot of time reading the applications, there's so many students that I feel like I get to know because I see their application multiple times through the committee process.
This is your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome back Sean Patel, who's the founder and CEO of Prep Expert. Sean, welcome back.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. And I'm so excited to announce that Prep Expert is the official title sponsor of the College Admissions Process podcast. This has been a partnership in the works for a while now, and I'm so glad we got it off the ground. We're so excited to work with families, parents, students of the College Admissions Process podcast at Prep Expert to help them through our live online SAT and ACT courses, not only improve their SAT and ACT scores, but help them get into college as well as win hundreds of thousands of dollars in college scholarships. Thank you so much for the partnership, and we are so excited to work with your families.
Thank you, Sean. And to learn more about how Prep Expert can support your child's academic journey, visit prepexpert.com today, and best wishes to all. Well, we really appreciate that overview, and I speak to a lot of students and their parents, and it's always a question that comes up. They really want to hear about the inside scoop. What happens when they hit submit to their application? So again, thank you for all of that insight. So Tamara, do you offer interviews, whether evaluative or informative, for students as part of your overall application process? And if so, how do you use the interview in the college admissions process, and what advice would you offer students who are preparing for an interview?
Great. So we do offer evaluative interviews. It's hard to divorce evaluation from information. I think that even though we are evaluating students in the interview, it also becomes a really rich bed of information. Because typically, if you're being interviewed, it is less likely that it's going to be a staff member, but sometimes it is. But you're going to have an opportunity to be interviewed by one of our Rice seniors, someone who's at the end of their journey at Rice. And so it becomes not only an opportunity for them to get to know you so they can write their evaluations, but for you to ask them some questions about their Rice experience. And the same thing is true of our alumni interviewers who volunteer their time to talk to students, get the information they need to know for the evaluation. But then this is somebody who's graduated from Rice and is now working in industry. So I think those two ideas are kind of married together. Now, we can't offer interviews to everyone. We can offer more interviews, actually, than we used to because they happen in a virtual format. But there used to be geographic boundaries where we didn't have any interviewers available in a certain area. And since we have so many Rice alumni in the Houston area, we had Rice alumni who didn't get to interview that many kids. But now, Rice alumni, alumnus in Houston can interview somebody abroad. So there's opened up more
Amazing,
doors
right?
and opportunities to be interviewed. The interview is not a required piece of the application process. It is, I always ask students to ask themselves, what do you think is your best feature? And if you feel like your personality is one of your best features, why not engage in an interview? For the most part, the interview, unless the student does something just intentionally bad, it's either going to have positive or neutral impact on the application process. We know this is a conversation that's happening between two people who you know, haven't met each other most likely before today. And so, you know, there's only, maybe they just didn't connect. But I will say more often than not, there's information sometimes that comes out that reinforces a feeling, provides context to something that the student, that in the student's application really underscores their passion for learning. Sometimes provides an opportunity for them to talk about something that we wouldn't have known to even ask in the application. So I would say as long as the interview does not bring you to a point of nervousness where you would not be able to perform well in that process, it may be something to consider, especially with a school like Rice, where a significant number of our population is going to be applying, you know, beyond Houston and beyond Texas. And they may not know as many people who went to Rice or so I feel like it's just another way to get more information that helps you in presenting yourself. We have interviews that happen before the students apply for admission and some that happen after. And so I think that just based on your availability, but if you don't get a chance to do it, do not feel like somehow now you're at a disadvantage because you didn't have a chance to do the interview. There's still plenty of ways in the application process to drive home all of the different things that we would be looking at in terms of the evaluative process. We'll be looking at, you know, again, your academic endeavors, whether that be in the classroom or outside of the classroom, what you've chosen to do with your time outside of class, your voice as it appears in the application. All of those are still pieces that you can contribute to, even if you don't have an interview.
Well, that's great insight and tremendous pieces of advice. And I love how you explained that the interview, you're not obligated to do it. However, if you think that your personality is something that makes you stand out, certainly go for it. And I appreciate how you explained that the interview usually helps. It's not going to hurt your overall application unless you do something really foolish. And I think students that are applying to a great school like Rice University are not going to come to an interview and do something foolish. So again, thank you so much for that insight. We truly appreciate it, Tamara. And what are the different ways a student may apply to Rice University? And is there a benefit to applying one way over the other?
So Rice is a little streamlined when it comes. I mean, there are so many schools out there that are offering so many decision plans. We pretty much offer we offer early decision, and which is our binding admissions program. So students who choose to apply early decision are typically with that choice saying, well, are they are saying with that choice that if Rice were to admit them, they've done their research, they've you know, used all of the tools that we make available to them, including our net price calculator when it comes to assessing whether or not Rice is an affordable option for them. They've looked at all of those options and they feel that Rice is their best match, to the point where they would like that opportunity to be viewed in that earlier setting. Usually no more than about 15% of our students who apply to Rice will apply under early decision. So there might be a slight advantage in terms of, you know, the amount of time that we have to review your application, the amount of students that you're being viewed against at that point or viewed with at that point. I don't want to say against. It's not necessarily a competition and there's no quotas. So, you know, we're going to be looking to see, you know, where we're and typically we're going to be bringing in about, you know, 42 to 45% of our class through early decision. So statistically, it could be a slightly, you know, it'll be, you'll see a higher percentage of acceptance during early decision. And then regular decision is the second plan. It is by no means, you know, means that it's total Hunger Games and that, you know, there's absolutely no chance for you to be admitted. No, you're still bringing, you know, qualities to the table. We're still shaping 7 different academic schools of study. We're still looking for the best matches for those programs. Yes, there will be more students that we will have to evaluate, and the percentage of acceptance will be lower. And that usually is akin to the overarching percentage of acceptance. For example, you know, 8% acceptance for a regular decision last year, overall percentage of acceptance was about 8%. We do also partner with a program called QuestBridge. And so that is the third way that a student may possibly be considered under the QuestBridge National College Match, but that is a very sort of curated program. It's specifically aimed at students for that would identify as truly low income. It does have a separate application that you would file with the QuestBridge organization for review. So if you're interested in that, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole necessarily right now, but that's another way that if you would identify as low income and you'd be interested in those schools, you can look into the QuestBridge process. But the majority of applicants that we're going to be reviewing will be either be doing early decision or regular decision.
Well, I really appreciate that. First of all, for sharing all the data that you did, that's very insightful, again, to the students and their parents. I also appreciate you mentioning the QuestBridge program. And by the way, Tamara, I always put the Office of Undergraduate Admissions link in the show notes of the podcast. So if there's anything else that you want to share with me so that I could link it in the show notes for the parents, just send it to me. And of course, I'll make it available to them. Another piece of the application for many schools is something we call demonstrated interest. So Tamara, can you share what are some of the things that students do to demonstrate their interest to Rice University? And do you in fact use it or not in your overall process?
Well, I will start with the idea of demonstrated interest, I think, has really become to be defined as a checklist of, you know, I did X, Y, and Z. And we can see, and quite honestly, students could do X, Y, and Z and still miss the point of, you know, why they are applying to a particular institution. So I think that what we've tried to move away from in terms of that thought process and redefining it as interest in Rice. And I think what we want you to think about those interactions as in terms of their nature is the fact that you are interacting with us to become more informed about why Rice or any institution would be the best choice for you. You're trying to look at your checklist of items that you're looking for in a college, and you're trying to establish how many of the items on that checklist are met by that particular school. And so it's your research. Now, as you know, some students are able to, you know, they are able to research on the web, and that's enough for them. And they know exactly. They've looked at the professor, curricula vitae, they've looked at everything, and they may not need as many in-person interactions. They may not need to do the virtual experiences that they may. We have students that we call stealth applicants that have had absolutely no engagement with us, but when they write their applications, they've got it. They're answering our questions right. With the details that really allow us to see them in the classroom, to see us how they're going to impact the community. And it should be a two-way street. We can also see not only what you're going to add, but how we're going to enhance what you bring to the process and make you the best person that we can on the other side of 4, sometimes 3.5, sometimes 5 years as an undergraduate. And so, but I would say in general, you know, things such as we do count virtual experiences. So if you engage with us virtually, we're counting that in terms of, you know, you can say I did this. And we're going to note that the fact that you did this, if you've taken time out of your schedule to fly across campus, we're going to know that. Right. But it's less right. of the fact that you did that. But what did you gain from the experience? And, you know, if you came here, hopefully what you'll be able to add is some rich details. Like, oh, when I came to campus, I got a chance to actually see, you know, students studying in the student center. Or I got to see where people tend to congregate on campus. And what a, you know, I drove down the driveway and that tunnel of trees really just, you know, appealed to me in terms of being able to see a school that's urban, but so much nature around it. And that's really what appeals. And I think being able to pull that back to, you know, what appealed to you about those experiences and how did they resonate and how did they connect? You know, did you encounter somebody who really, you know, was the epitome of what you wanted out of your experience. So it's not about a checklist, and so you shouldn't treat it as such, at least for us. But that is a question you need to ask every school that you go to. Some schools are very particular about students, visiting. And I'll say that particular expectation becomes more crystallized as you are closer to the institution. So I will not tell you that if you're right there in New York and you don't visit some school in New York, that they're not probably going to look at that a little differently. But on the flip side, you know, if you're from New York and you took the time out of your schedule to come and see us, we're excited by that. But we also have to acknowledge that not every student has the capacity, you know, whether that be time, money, resources, to be able to, you know, elevate that to a campus visit. So we're not necessarily expecting that. But we hope you'll take advantage of so many opportunities just to make sure that you have greater understanding of the questions that we're going to be asking you on the application. You have a greater understanding of what you're getting into in terms of an experience, because Rice is, and any school that you go to, it's not just about getting a degree, it's an experience. And so we want you to feel that you're making the best match possible, and that often will come through, and you'll feel more confident that you're making that best match. And applying to college is no joke. It's time consuming. So why would you want to spend time applying to a school if you haven't done that exploration to make sure it is truly a place where you would be willing to spend 4 years of your life?
Well, that's a tremendous answer. And I love the way you explained that it would be about asking yourself, what did you gain from the experience? What did you gain from the visit? It's not just putting a check in different boxes. So not only what you gained, but what appealed to you. And then using that after your own reflection, whether it's in the interview, if they choose to do it, or perhaps they talk about it in their college essay in terms of what is it that made Rice University feel like the perfect home, the perfect fit for them. And that's why they want to come and spend the next 4 years or more there. So again, Tamara, really appreciate that. Yeah, go ahead.
And before we leave that, I would say, I think, the one thing that I see that impacting the most positively is very often the short responses, because a lot of students spend a lot of time on their essays, but they don't necessarily ace the answer of, why this particular area of study and why this particular school. And I think that those experiences will speak directly to being able to do well on those particular short answer questions. You know, just being able to immediately pinpoint, this is why, I want to study this particular area of study, and I saw through these experiences, you're good at this, not just good at it because everybody's going to say they have a good biology or psychology program, but it enables you to say, oh, that professor has a specialty in this, and that really speaks to my interest in psychology or whatever bit. You could be saying, oh, okay, now I understand that cognitive sciences is now really where I'm thinking about rather than neuroscience. And that came directly from the opportunity to engage with the campus and to engage with the information session that was online, and they explained the difference between the two programs. And so those are the kind of distinctions. And I think really, those short answer questions can often be the thing that, a student doesn't take as much advantage of. I will say, you need to take advantage of every part of your application to be able to really give us a strong sense of who you are, what are your aspirations, and what excites you about this experience, this wonderful experience we call college.
Well, that's such great advice and insight. And of course, you're referring to short answers, or perhaps a lot of people call them the supplemental essays. But it's important to do your research, do your homework, and when you answer those questions, answer specific, in this case, to Rice University. Don't answer for example, why Rice University question with an answer that can apply, to multiple schools. It has to be specific to Rice University if you want to stand out as an applicant that is very serious, in fact, about attending Rice. So Tamara, thank you so much. I really appreciate that insight. I also know that Rice University is test optional. Tamara, can you share the percentage of students that applied and were ultimately admitted that did not submit test scores?
Sure. For us, we haven't delved into any large scale reasoning as to, you know, when students had the opportunity to submit testing versus not having that opportunity. But the main thing, we just wanted to make sure that students who truly did not have that that opportunity to test for whatever reason, especially having come out of a pandemic. But, you know, again, even before the pandemic, there are often barriers to students being able to test. And so in this case, you know, it was driven by the pandemic. But, you know, again, now it's something that, you know, we haven't made any final decisions. But it did allow some students to come to the table that would not have been able to come to the table when everything else in their application was strong. They were at the top of their class. They were doing the best they could with the resources available to them. They were involved. They have a perspective that we'd love to see more of at the institution at Rice. They have a voice that we would love to have as part of our community. We wanted to make sure that we weren't cutting that off. Now, in our case, I know that many other schools had, you know, were able to cite like 50% of their students applied. And in terms of our applicant pool, quite honestly, we still saw the majority of students who did submit some form of testing. So for us, it was more like 25% of our applicants did not submit testing last year. And, you know, and it kind of came out in the wash with, in terms of the students that we were able to offer admission, about the same percentage. So about a quarter did not submit testing. And so, you know, that does put us on the lower end of what some other schools were reporting. But again, we're really excited for that 25% who perhaps would not have been, you know, if we had kept to a test policy, would not have been able to actually be reviewed in the process. So,
understood. And thank you so much for sharing that data. And does Rice accept AP, IB, or dual enrollment classes for credit?
We do I always say it depends. I think, you know, we have some history of, we have probably the strongest history with AP, and there are some pretty clear AP statistics for, criteria for accepting an AP course for credit. Fours or fives on AP exams are evaluated for credit for most exams, not all exams. And you can see the list on our website. When you go to the, if you put in AP credit on the main Rice page, it should pull up the page for the registrar who manages the credit policies here at Rice. IB, a little bit more restrictive, some would say a little bit more stringent in that, you know, our credit policies specifically speak to those who are in pursuit of the full diploma and who score, and we only consider HLs, higher level courses, for possible credit, sixes and sevens on the HL exams. And then for dual enrollment, that truly is on a case by case basis. Now, some basic criteria that we have to, that if we're going to possibly consider the course for credit, it has to be taught at the college. It cannot be taught in the school environment, because you're asking us for college credit. We want a college level setting. You'd have to make a C plus or better, I believe. It's either a C or a C plus. And it cannot be used to meet your minimum high school requirements. And so, for example, if we require 4 years of English, and you only take one semester of senior dual enrollment, and that is your fourth year of English, then we wouldn't be able to count it as a college course. But in some cases, you know, if students are taking multiple English courses and they're doing it by semester, and it's meeting all of the other criteria, by the time you get to your senior year, you may have in excess of what we would consider to be 4 years of English. And then depending on the course matter, and if we can find a comparable course here at Rice, then that might be able to be considered. But there's a lot more hoops to be jumped through, if you will, a lot more sort of evidence that needs to be submitted on behalf of the transcripts that need to be submitted and information that needs to be submitted by the school to be able to assess whether or not the dual enrollment course that you're taking will pass the test for credit.
Understood. We appreciate that. Thank you so much, Tamara. And how important are students' courses in progress and grades in their senior year? And what are you looking for when reviewing them?
Well, the first thing I want to establish is, and I hope that all of the people that you talk to say this, the race is not over, even if you get admitted in your senior year. And so, to start with the first part of your question, what we hope is that in senior year, senior year should hopefully be the opportunity for you to be challenging yourself at a relatively high level, based on all of the work that you've done prior to this in 9th through 11th grade, and sometimes even before that. I mean, sometimes you've already, there are accelerated programs you've taken in 7th and 8th grade that have led to what you're able to do in your senior year, especially in areas such as math and language. And so what we're looking to see in your senior year, how has everything kind of led up to this point? And what are you taking, and how does that sort of reinforce what you're telling us is going to be your next step, which is what you want to study in college? And we're looking for that preparation. We're looking to see, how that's all played out in terms of what does that senior year schedule look like. Now, in some cases, you may have exhausted some of the courses that were available to you at a higher level in your 11th grade year. And so maybe, senior year is going to look like a combination of things. Maybe you are reaching outside of your school environment to take a couple of courses because you've exhausted math at your school. Or maybe you're having the opportunity to take a few more classes that are maybe we would consider to be electives because you've done all of that base work. But maybe it's giving you the chance to maybe do some independent research or independent project work. So we're looking for however that expresses itself in your activities, and how that contributes to your overall academic profile. We're looking to, now for some students, senior year is very important because they did have some rough patches earlier in their process. So senior year may be your chance to kind of say, okay, I'm working at this level and now I've gotten used to the rigor of the particular courses. So I'm able to perform better in my senior year than perhaps I did in my sophomore or my junior year. And so sometimes with senior year, you're able to show that upward trend that would add to your review. Now, what we don't want to see is a downward trend. And so so I think senior years isn't always about, making sure you challenge yourself more and more and more. Maybe you want to find the appropriate level of challenge, and you definitely still want to post a solid performance in your senior year. You want to finish strong. And just know that we're going to be looking at you all the way through. So we do require a final grade report, and we want to see that you finished as somewhat of the same student that we admitted to the university.
Well, I appreciate that, and I love what you said. Find the appropriate level of challenge and continue to put your best foot forward, which is, great advice for seniors and all the students and their parents. So thank you so much for that. Tamara, obviously, the college essay is another piece of the overall application. What are some examples of college essays that really stuck with you? And what advice would you share with prospective students in terms of what to think about when they sit down to start writing their essay?
Well, if it's okay with you, I might start with that second part first. I think you need to, first of all, you need to answer the prompt. It's like, the news that I have for you is that it is going to be often very hard to write a one-size-fits-all essay that you can just cut and paste and put into every application, especially when it comes to supplemental essays. Now, of course, if you're working on your Common application or your Coalition application or your QuestBridge application, that one application is going to be applicable to a lot of different schools. So one thing I would say is I would look to see what is being asked on, you know, what prompts are available to you on that main sort of common application, if you and coalition application or QuestBridge application, you know, what are the prompts that are available there? And look at the supplemental questions for each of the schools that you're considering, and make sure that you're not that you're picking the best prompt that's not going to be repeated on a supplement, and so that way you don't get to the supplement and say, well, I already answered this question.
Right.
Well, let me just say that even if you get to the supplement, you say, I already answered this question, you've answered a version of that question, you should then take a different tact with your other application. So, but you want to see this as a strategy. Every one of these essays is a chance to get a different piece of your voice in the mix, in the discussion, to be talked about amongst those individuals. But answer prompts that are going to allow you to dig into the particular specificity of your life story. You have a story. At 16, 17, 18, you have a story. You have some, there have been forces that have shaped you. There have been things you've chosen that other people didn't choose. There have been family, a family environment that, may be distinctive to you. Where you grew up can be distinctive. What type of environment you were in school can be distinctive. All of those things, look for those areas of distinction and how you can definitely, and how those essay questions might allow you to dig into those pieces so that what you are presenting to us is authentic. You're going to get tired of hearing that word too. You're going to get tired of hearing the words holistic and authentic, but we want to hear stories. And I think people are, I think you, don't spend too much time thinking about what we want. Think about what you want to share. And it's not about pleasing us. It's about pleasing yourself and really thinking about, is this the best reflection of what I want these schools to know about me? And what I'm, the perspective that I'm bringing to the table. And if we don't want that, you don't necessarily want to be there with us. So we should Right. want your voice as it's presented. Obviously, your essay should be, well written. That doesn't mean perfection. It does mean that, that your message isn't obscured by too many different mistakes in terms of how you're expressing yourself or misspellings or anything like that. But we're not sitting there with, at least I'm not sitting there with a red pen and trying to figure out how many places where you used, where you didn't necessarily use perfect language. I'm not using perfect language right now, so I'm not expecting perfection out of you. I think about when I'm reading an essay, I think about, okay, where, would I like, would I have been roommates with this student? Are they going to have a roommate? Where are they going to be telling this story? And how impactful will their story be to somebody else? And that leads me to, I guess, some of the essays that have been most impactful for me. They were not big essays. We're not asking you to write about world issues and we don't expect that you should be, that you need to actually have some trauma or something of that nature. That's not the price of admission. And it's not a requirement. Now, if through some traumatic event or some trauma in your life, you feel like your story would be incomplete without us hearing that story, then by all means, put it in there. But don't feel like you have to trot out your trauma for us, for our enjoyment, or to feel that you're different. And it's okay to have had a good life. It's okay. It's okay to have had, two parents. It's okay. We're not looking for, or to have, a family that cares for you, whatever shape that takes. You might have been an only child. You might have been, one of many children. Everybody brings a different story to the table, and we just want to see and respect that story. It's okay to be funny. One of my favorite essays was a student who wrote about the experience of growing up in a town where the average age was somewhere around 60, and just how interesting it was to grow up in that space where the school is small, and I'm not sure how this community came, but just so many different pieces of how different things worked in that particular community. And he told a story about this older woman who drove through the donut shop, and not through the drive through. Oh, boy. She drove through the donut shop, and so but he said so the police officers were there, and obviously they had some official business, but that it taught him how to take things. It's so easy to move fast through this world, and that community really taught him how to be more measured with his time, to slow down, to appreciate moment, and that's what he hoped to be able to share with his fellow students, because school, and it can feel very much like a rat race, that you're constantly moving at a certain pace, and that in some ways, you're eventually going to slow down. Well, so why not practice now and slowing down and really thinking about the things that are, and that the world doesn't fall apart necessarily when you slow down. And so it was just, he had a really good, painted a lot of pictures with his stories. Sort of on a more, I don't want to say somber, but it was just so thoughtful. This young person wrote about the difficult relationship they had with their step parent, and that this step parent was constantly trying to find ways to break them down, and they related it to this tree that was in their yard, and that the parent would constantly hack at this tree and hack at it, and they tried to poison the tree, and they tried to, and that whatever they did, they could not get that tree to stop growing. and at some point, without her even saying it, you saw the things that she saw herself, that she had a kinship with that tree, and that right. no matter what was right. sort of said to her, her roots were too deep, her belief in herself was too rooted, and for right. her to be destroyed by this person who, through their own unhappiness, was trying to destroy her. And wow. and then at the very end of the essay, they just gave up. The tree just kept growing. And it's like, and right. they just said, fine, whatever. And and that's what she said, I'm looking forward to seeing how my roots will allow me to right. grow in the greater world, because I know that I'm worthy. And it's just the most beautiful. It was a beautiful essay. And so anyway, don't be afraid. But I had somebody who wrote this jaunty essay about their car, and the car was their time in their car every day was the most important time to them. They made poetry in the car. They sang music in the car. Sometimes they had friends in the car. Sometimes they didn't have friends in the car. And it's just that, you got so much of that fun personality out of that student, all rooted in their car. So don't think that everything has to be, a work of Shakespeare. It's really about right. telling the story that you want to tell in this process.
Well, that's a tremendous answer. So many great points. I particularly appreciated how you explained to use each piece of the application, such as the essay, the supplemental questions, to provide different pieces of your voice and think about what you want to share. Not what you think people want to hear, but what you want to share. What's your story? What's the best reflection of you? So those were just tremendous points. And thank you so much for sharing all of those great examples. I really appreciate it. And Tamara, of course, the teacher letters of recommendation are obviously another part of the application. What are you looking for in terms of helping to enhance an application from the teacher's letters? And if you could provide an example, that would be great too.
Sure. We tell, and when I talk to teachers, I tell them that, If you have, insights into what the student does outside of class, or some pieces of their, personal experience, that's fine to include. But your job as a teacher is really to talk about that life of the mind. And it's like, that's what we need, is to really talk about, how the student, because you're picking as a student, you're going to pick teachers who are going to write on your behalf. Very often you're being asked to pick teachers that are aligned with what you want to study, that we can make sure that you, that you've grown in those experiences, or that they're going to speak to, what your experience is in the classroom. So primarily what I, those letters of recommendation, and when you're selecting a teacher to write for you, that needs to be somebody who is acquainted with your work in that classroom, who is acquainted with not necessarily all, the easy work. Sometimes the best teachers of teachers of recommendation are going to be those teachers who saw you grow. Who saw you, who maybe saw you struggle a bit, maybe struggle's too strong of a word, but maybe you didn't get 100% of the concepts, or maybe, things didn't come to you as easy in the beginning, but you grew, and they can talk, they can speak to you, how do you take advantage of, constructive advice? How do you, engage with subject matter when it is not easy? What is your process for breaking down that information? Or maybe you are indeed the class leader, but then sometimes it's really great to see, this is not a student who just mastered the material just to say, I mastered the material. This is a class leader. This is someone who understands that what the position they occupy in class is not necessarily shared by all of their classmates. So whenever possible, that student really does reach out to their fellow classmates. Or this is a student who doesn't speak a lot in class, but when they do, people listen to them, know, and this is what they're able to share. Where a student excels in class, there may be some really particular talents that you have in the classroom. I mean, one of the letters that I read was, in the face of the pandemic, was a teacher talking about the fact that yes, it was great to be teaching this student, but that this student didn't divorce themselves, didn't divorce their personality from how they came to class. And one of the things that they sort of did as a perk me up or pick me up in terms of virtual classes is that they started bringing their parakeet to class. and the parakeet would just sit on their shoulder. They'd be engaged in class, and so everyone, including the teacher, started looking forward to seeing the little parakeet. And so in a time where everybody it was going through a tough time, including the instructors, it was such a sort of maybe inspirational moment or a reminder that we're still people just trying to connect. And so yes, I would say, definitely they need to be able to speak to the classroom experience. But if you can have the advantage of finding somebody who does know you maybe a little bit more deeply than that, or knows something that's really important to you that might not even be related to that subject matter, or knows that you can connect ideas across subject matter, sometimes those are really great things to find out about a particular from the teacher recommendation. But the main thing that they need to do is to really make sure that they're telling us that you're a student who can master material, can grow, and in some ways you're really excited about the learning journey, and that it is can definitely be a journey, and that they like you. So I don't want to say that's like when I say that, I mean like they care enough to be able to write a detailed recommendation. And when I say detailed, it doesn't have to be, I'm not talking about the number of pages. There are some people who can get it done in one page and make a very impactful recommendation. They know what they understand the assignment, as we say now. It's like, yeah, I think that's what you want to do. You want to approach people who want to do this on your behalf, but at the same time, give them plenty of time to be good advocates for you in this process.
Well, those are tremendous pieces of advice. This entire conversation has been really special because you gave awesome insight. Tamara, we really can't thank you enough. And it now leads me to my last question, unfortunately, which is, what are your top three pieces of advice that you would give students and their parents getting ready for the college admissions process?
I'm trying to think of, because I mean, I think that you've done quite a few of these, and I can think of some of my colleagues and some of the advice that they would give. I would say, if you're not enjoying some piece of this, you're doing it wrong. This should not feel like always a chore. You're picking a place that will be hopefully be transformative for you in some way. When I think, and it doesn't mean that, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a totally different person on the other side. No, you may be similar to the same person, but there's going to be experiences and memories and things that you're going, things that will keep you, when you're out in the work world, you're going to remember some of the things but it should touch you in some way. And that idea is exciting. I mean, when I got to college, I didn't realize how many people I would meet. I didn't realize how many teachers I would meet that, really were rooting for me. I didn't realize I would meet teachers that were not necessarily rooting for me. And I learned how to deal with that as well. You're going to learn coping mechanisms. And all of this is going to contribute. You're going to have the opportunity to do things, and people are going to pay you to do them. Like, you're going to be able to go abroad, and this is the only time in your life that somebody's going to pay you money to go and spend some time abroad. So, I mean, there's going to be experiences. And so if you're not excited about those possible experiences, and it just becomes, I've got to go to college, and because it's expected of me, then that's not that, maybe you should take a year off and take a gap year and refigure out why you want to go to college. I think this is the time for honest conversations with all the way around. Parents, do not let your students get to the end of a college search and then you tell them that you're not willing to do some things. If you're not willing to let them go, if you start saying things like, well, I didn't think you were going to get in there. Well, I'm not paying for that. And it's like, do not end up on, or, have honest conversations about your income level. And I know that these are the toughest conversations, that you will ever have. Just saying that I just don't, but don't not provide opportunities to discover places, because I think what will happen is that you are curating your college list. You're saying only these schools matter, or only these schools will be the ones that are valid choices, when there are so many schools out there who can provide incredible opportunity and will be able to support you in whatever way possible, including financially, if you'll just open your mindset. And so don't, that this is not this. There's nothing about this that is a value judgment of who you are as a person or who you are as a parent or a family. This is especially if you're going for that highest level of selection. There are just too many things that are outside of your selection process, of your control, that is, that for you to think that this is about you and your college readiness or whether you provided all of the necessary opportunities. There are institutional priorities. There are, you can't control how many people are going to apply with an interest in the same thing you want to do. And that doesn't mean you can't find a great opportunity somewhere else. So do not bring, too much into this process where you start judging yourself based on a process that you can't control at some stages. Now, with that said, I want you to feel empowered that you do have, this process is basically three steps. You decide where to apply. That's your choice. Now, we make our admissions decisions. That's the choice that's not yours. But then if you've done it right, you're going to have choices unless you, you know, applied early decision and you're really excited with that choice. But if you end up and you have choices in April, now we're going to spend the entire month of April trying to convince you to take that offer. So now the shoe's back on your foot. So two out of those three choices are yours. So do feel empowered. So I guess those are my, I think that was three. Enjoy the process. Do not, you know, judge yourself based on this process and about your worthiness or your value. This is not about that type of thing. That you just need to do your research well and apply to the schools and use the resources of people around you, people like Mr. Durante, it's like, or Dr. Durante. It's like, you need to use the people around you. They want success for you. Don't ignore them. So, and then you know, and just remember that there are plenty of places that want you. So be empowered in this process.
Well, this has been a tremendous conversation. And in terms of resources, Tamara Seiler, you're a tremendous resource, and this has been great. Thank you so much for your insight, your time, your expertise. It shows that you've been doing this for a long time because you gave us so much in-depth information. I'm so happy because I know this is going to help so many students and their parents. Tamara, I hope to have you on it again. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be here today. And it's just been, it's been a joyful conversation. These are the conversations that remind me why I've been doing this for almost 30 years. So.
Wow. Well, you were awesome. We really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP. Hey, podcast friends, if you've been enjoying the College Admissions Process Podcast, I'm excited to share my new book, Straight from the Admissions Office, Insider Strategies for College Applications. It's packed with insights and tips from over 250 podcast episodes with admissions professionals designed to make the college process less overwhelming. Whether you're a student, parent, or college counselor, it's a valuable resource for navigating the admissions process. By grabbing a copy, you're also helping to support the podcast. The links are in the show notes. Thank you, and best wishes to all with the college admissions process.